Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
Well, it'd be interesting. How can a mediator screw up a hard negotiation?
Many ways. How many ways can a plumber wreck your house?
In an earlier episode of IDN, Australian mediator John Wade took us through the experiences he's had in observing parties who've had to deal with hard negotiators, hard bargainers, and the strategies that they used to get around or deal with someone who poses real obstacles to reaching agreement. In this continuation of that discussion, John takes us through how he, as a mediator, has devised certain strategies to work around and address the problem of the hard bargainer who can pose real obstacles to reaching a solution in the context of a mediation.
Let's shift gears just for a second and put this into the context now from the hard negotiator into the hard mediation, the hard negotiation, and what a mediator can do. And you gave a very interesting example to me earlier today of parties that called you and said, we have a very difficult thing that we want to achieve all in one day, and you have to give us a result by 5 p.m.
Oh, I see. Yes, it was interesting. And I guess as you get older, you try more riskier things. This was a couple from France who emailed me persistently, each one of them independently, and said they were coming to Australia. They own properties in various places in the world and some in Australia. And they said, we are separating and we wish to divide up our empire. And they said, we're coming in this week. We have one day free. It must all be done by 5 o'clock. And I emailed back saying, sorry, I don't do that. I'm a mediator. This is my rate of settlement. It's not 100% by any means. So you should find someone else. Emailed back and said, no, John, we want to fix by 5 o'clock. And you tell us what to do. You decide for us. I said, sorry, don't do that. So there's this interchange of harassment saying that they were looking for an electrician and I was really a plumber. But eventually I gave in and said, because they kept harassing and saying that they'd been told, John, you're the person to do this. So I just composed on the spot and sent back, look, what if I did this? And what if we negotiated together for 3 hours and then I will decide the size of your empire? I will tell you how much money you own because there's many valuation disputes. And then we'll negotiate for another hour after I've made that decision, and you'll decide in what percentages you'll divide your empire. And if you don't, within an hour, I'll take over and I'll tell you what percentages. And then finally, you'll have a go at deciding which assets will go in each percentage pool. And if you can't negotiate it, I'll decide it. So it's a three-stage process. And they wrote back, oh, this is wonderful, John. This is just...
What structure, you know, and I had to tell you, when you told it to me, I said, that's an interesting, very structured way of doing
it. Well, let me tell you, from my point of view, all I could see is the things that could go wrong, the double crosses halfway through. No, we didn't agree to that. So because I had a short contract drawn up as a process, and I emailed it to and they signed it. But I was so concerned about it that there would be a double cross, that they would say, no, I don't, I'm going to shoot the messenger. I don't like what you've told us at 12 o'clock.
I'm just speaking about the structure that you've presented. Funny, I've taken many training courses in GE, and one of the trainings I took was how to arrange an effective meeting. What they say is always have an agenda. Here's what we're going to do, and every single hour, all broken down, and that's the way you accomplish an effective meeting. It sounds kind of like your proposal. There was a slight variation on how to structure it every single step of the way.
It gave them some sort of comfort, and they were a very likable pair, and we had lawyers in the background, not in the room. They were hovering on the telephone. But I reflected my nervousness by saying to them during the negotiations, don't let me make the decision, but this is what I'm thinking. So I was foreshadowing the decision, and that influenced their negotiations. So they decided all three steps themselves with some pretty tough negotiations.
They wanted to decide it themselves instead of having you decide it for them.
But I told them the bad news as they went along. This is the kind of thing I'm thinking, and that that pushed them there. So that's an example of a process that worked, maybe by serendipity. but I could give you stories about ones that haven't worked too.
Well, in fact, let's talk about hard mediations and how a mediator. Well, it'd be interesting. How can a mediator screw up a hard negotiation?
Okay. Many ways. How many ways can a plumber wreck your house? The most common complaint about mediators is passivity. I didn't hire you to sit there and carry messages, John. So one of the things that can quickly wreck a negotiation or mediation is if you as a mediator carry bad news from one room to another. Why? They shoot the messenger. So I think if you've got a hard bargain, and you must organize not to carry messages. Even if people hate one another and won't sit in the same room, you must arrange for another message carrier. So I sometimes have what I call the offers room, where I take the moderate from each of the teams, and I tell them, I want you, and I want you. And we go together in the offers room, and the moderates make the offers.
Not the moderates being the moderate person within each of the sides.
Exactly. It's the person who's not a wimp, who wants an outcome, who can speak assertively, but is willing to move on some things. Right. And I have to identify them by gossip, by preparation. So that's just one strategy, is don't let yourself as a mediator carry bad news, because then you become associated with bad news. Why should they trust someone who's always bringing in terrible offers from the Stonewaller? And so that's one of the mistakes I see.
Oh, anyway, so passivity can also be taken as interfering with the perception of neutrality.
Exactly.
I can actually see that. I can see how, you know, the mediator coming in with an unfiltered, they just gave us an outrageous offer, and pretending that it's not an outrage. You as a party, you may feel, how can you not react to that?
Well,
can't you see that this is absurd?
the other dilemma is, if you carry messages, you know you're carrying lies, because they give you the message and say, John, take this over to them and tell them that's the best we're going to do. Well, you know that's a lie. So you become associated with lies. So you have to begin to lie in order to soften the messages. They discover that you've lied because you just say, oh, their offer was. You drop off the tail. That's their best offer. So I think the first lesson is, when dealing with a hard bargainer as a mediator, don't carry messages. Find someone else to carry them so they can hate someone else. And you can constantly affirm, my role is to create clarity here. And I have another speech, which is 4% of these disputes need a judge. You could be in the 4%, you could be in the 96%. We're here to decide which percentage you're in. Probably you're in the 96%. But if you're in the 4%, you shouldn't waste your time here. You should get out and get into another stream, spend your time and your money up there. And that's also relieve some of their anxiety that you're lying to them. You're not. You're just trying to help them make a wise decision. And in some cases, it's clear they shouldn't be there. They're dealing with a maniac who's extremely angry, who's extremely wealthy, who's trying to hurt them. They should just clarify that that's what's happening.
And then get out.
Get out. don't hang around.
Don't waste your time.
And there's another psychological type who love negotiation.
So it sounds like that's a case where a mediator who is not effective can just send the parties off into, again, worsen the situation. And maybe, rather than just say, go fight your litigation,
yeah,
it foments even more negative emotions potentially.
You leave them in the room to bleed for another 6 hours. It's the wrong intervention. But it's difficult as a mediator because you know that most settlements...
It's a form of mediation torture. Let's say.
Yeah, but the irony is here, Michael, that most settlements take place in the last 10% of time available.
Right, right.
So as a mediator, you know you need to have some bladder power and you need to have some persistence, because they ain't going to get there if at the first 10 bits of pain they get out.
I never heard the expression bladder of power.
Yeah. Yeah. Mistake one, become a message carrier for the hard bargainer. Mistake two, carry the inevitable lies attached to that. And I just say to people, you hired me to be useful. I'm not going to become useless in the first exchange of ideas.
So it's interesting. So inappropriate, let's say, passivity in a mediation,
yes,
can actually make things worse.
Exactly.
Rather than better. or associating yourself with as a form of passivity with the other side can also, you know, lead to a bad outcome.
Definitely. And then the other mistake is bringing the wrong people to the meeting. So if by reputation someone's a stonewaller, or is a hard bargainer, or is extremely emotionally distressed, why just set up another meeting with those people? Your job is to destabilize, to create different perspectives. So in the preparation, which most mediators don't do, many mediators just book a day and run it. My experience has been there's only three things that matter in both negotiation and mediation. That's preparation, preparation, and preparation. So if in your initial diagnosis the cause of the conflict is the hard bargainer, you need some strategies as a mediator to change the dynamics. So it's, can we bring the accountant? Who else could come along to give a different perspective? Who relates best to the stonewaller? Do we need a junior, a senior, a female, a male? Who is going to... Do we need a flatterer? You often need a flatterer because the stonewaller needs to be butted up in some way.
How often do you deal with the stonewallers after the mediation, that the formal session has concluded and the mediation continues? I mean, do you do that? Do you continue mediations after the initial encounter?
The answer is yes. Some of my mediations last for 3 months, but most of them are a grand event for a day or a day and a half or 2 days. But I have had the experience, which is a fairly sad experience, is the stonewaller gets carried away with their own rhetoric. They alienate the other side. That's one of the downsides of being a stonewaller, is you end up with another side who is now embittered. They've put bitterness on the table, says, I won't invest any more transaction costs in working with you. And the phone call comes in 3 days later from the stonewaller saying, well, what do we do next? And unfortunately, the answer is, well, probably nothing, because your behavior, you burnt your bridges at that meeting, because they now characterize you as someone not worth putting the work in for. So we can brainstorm with the stonewaller who else could go apart from you. How could you open the negotiations without looking weak? Who makes the first phone call, that question? Should it be done by a serendipity meeting at a coffee shop where it's not perceived to be you're approaching the other side? What are the mechanisms to try and get back in the room? But often they're not skilled enough to be willing to engage in those conversations. They just say, well, I want to reopen the conversation. Well, they can't just make the phone call because...
damage has been done.
Yeah, and they will look weak by making phone calls.
You know, I saw a post-mediation work, the work of a mediator after the actual formal session had concluded, done a masterful job a couple of months ago. Tony Allen, I don't know if you know Tony with the Cedar. We had a multi-party mediation, or multi-party dispute, and all parties were present. And I don't think that it would be fair to characterize one of the parties as a stonewaller. It was just, I mean, you've got many different parties, and they have their own internal organizations and constituencies. They have different expectations, and there was one that was not aligned with the expectations of the other parties. And Tony just, he amazingly was able to continue working the process and to keep the dialogue going until eventually a settlement was reached post-actual mediation.
Yes. And I think
really building on what he had learned, I think, about the parties and the dynamics in the course of the mediation that we went together.
And that's... I can give you many stories of not as formal as that, but people having walked out at 11 o'clock at night and standing on the pavement, one person driving off in their BMW and the other standing there, head down, where you walk out and stand next to them. How are you feeling about that meeting? Terrible. They say, terrible. Yeah, I say, no, it's a pity it finished just as it did, because this was the kind of pattern that I was foreseeing was going to happen. You mentioned this is the kind of pattern. They said, well, if it had gone that way, maybe we should have stayed in a bit longer. Would you like me to phone the guy in the BMW driving off there? Yeah, that's a good idea. And so we find the mediation continues after it's been abandoned by a series of phone calls at midnight, which really say, would you be willing to make that offer at 9 o'clock the next morning, given that that's where I think it was going? Let me think about it, John. Got to talk to my... And they talk about the outside person they got to talk to. phone calls at 9 o'clock. Could you make that offer? Yes, if. Well, I think you should drop off two of the ifs, leave one on. And at that point, I will carry a message. I'll say, you're doing so well. There's so much disillusionment on the other side. When I carry the message, I'm going to use different language to you. And we've had amazing success the next morning. And break the rule, don't carry the message.
Well, great lesson in the tirelessness of mediation and mediators. Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Michael.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.